This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
For midnight and cloudy with low around 47. Right now, for the alternative forecast, we have a waxing gibbous root moon in Virgo. The moon is 11 days old. And for those who weren't aware of it, on Friday, apparently, a meteor crashed into the moon, which caused an explosion, which is actually visible in the naked eye. And referring back to our own Cascadia weather report, winds of 200 miles per hour are exceptional and rare, and having this type of weather pattern in the middle of the country more and more frequently is something that we should turn our attention to and be very concerned about. Once again, is it too late? Well, we'll find out, won't we? Basically, the rest of the alternative forecast is holding steady. The cyanotic forecast, internal seed-bearing fruit, the biodynamic people say that with the moon in Virgo, it's an earth sign, so go for those root plants. And the sidereal people, again, dry and barren, garden maintenance. That's it for both the conventional and the alternative of forecasts. There are a few stories from around Cascadia. Hundreds are gathering in Salem tomorrow on the steps of the state capitol to pressure lawmakers to put a price on pollution and address the main causes of climate change, not disaster capitalist fixes whereby companies emerge ready and willing to exploit the results of our folly, but actually stopping the root causes, the overconsumption, the overpopulation. All of these things are on the agenda. That's tomorrow, and it's in Salem, and we'll have a bit more about it later on. Of course, we'll be posting all the information about how, you know, where, when, and all that on the KBOO website. It seems, perhaps, that with the extreme weather conditions in the center of the country right now, perhaps, people will turn their attention to the causes of these types of weather patterns we haven't seen before. Weather not seen in nature, as we like to call it. We also have an update from Jody McCaffrey and the LNG situation. Looks like Obama's definitely going to sign off on an LNG export piece of legislation. Very, very bad news. But for right now, we're going to be speaking with our first guest. We're speaking with Camilla Thorndike. Good morning, Camilla. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks.
Well, there is a very long, very intensive and detailed piece on Monsanto. There is a global march against Monsanto on May 25th. And there is some breaking GMO news. This was a piece by Wendy Davis that came out just yesterday. In it, there's a detailed analysis, a breakdown of exactly how GMOs are able to actually get into human cells. And what we have been expecting to hear for a long time. We haven't had evidence until now. And I wondered if you could carefully take the audience, our listeners, through some of the points that we should be most concerned about here.
I'm actually was hoping to speak about the Salem event tomorrow. I'm not an expert on GMOs.
By all means, I think perhaps we got a number switched around, but that's good. That's fine. We'll take it straight from there. Tomorrow there is the event in Salem. We mentioned that a bit earlier. A number of different groups are going to be there leading the charge. And my main question here is, What sort of movement do you think that this is going to prompt or provoke? Because it seems as that people are more readily accept disaster capitalism fixes for these types For the kinds of problems that are now confronting us, the problems presented by GMOs, the problems presented by extreme weather situations, which we see more and more frequently. It seems that these are the disasters that are slow moving that we don't respond to, and very well. We just don't seem to be wired as a species to respond to the problems of climate collapse. Whereas a shooting at a school, people respond to very well. So your approach this time, what do you believe that this tactic, this particular strategy will accomplish?
Right, yeah, thanks for the question. We believe that the primary problem at play is that fossil fuels are vastly underpriced, considering the damages they inflict to us and our environment. So what we need to do is internalize those externalities, those external costs that we're bearing as a society, so that the price reflects those costs and that people and businesses and the market can be adjusted. Right now, it's really out of whack. We're subsidizing fossil fuels. And on top of that, not being able to compete with the conservation and with renewable energy and local business as well against those fuel prices because they're so low. So what we're asking is for a revenue neutral tax on carbon or fee. Revenue neutral means that the revenue collected from that tax would not go to grow the size of government or create new programs, but it would rather either offset existing taxes, that like personal income tax, for instance, or it would be returned to consumers in the form of a check as a dividend. That's the model proposed by the national nonpartisan grassroots effort called the Citizens Climate Lobby. And the tax and shift is what we've seen work in British Columbia. They've reduced the use of refined petroleum products by 15% in only 3 years with this policy. So we know it works, and Oregon can do the same.
Can you let listeners know, just before we let you go, we're out of time here, where and when people should assemble in Salem?
Yes. So we're assembling an enormous art salmon crate in Southern Oregon as a statement of our concerns on climate change on the Capitol Mall tomorrow, starting at 11 a.m. We'll have a rally sometime after noon on the Capitol steps, and the event wraps up at 4. We'll have activities at the UCC Church just a few blocks away in case of inclement weather.
Yeah.
So we join you to www.oregoncan.info, oregoncan.info for the schedule of events.
Thank you so much for that. We've been speaking with Hannah Soule. We'll see you all down in Salem. It's important to do this. At this point, any action that we take is of great consequence, because we are living in times of very great danger, which of course we create ourselves. We now are going to be speaking with Bo Hodai on the issue of dissent, terrorism, and the ways and means that the government is bringing to bear on resistance. Good morning, Bo, and we're very, very happy to welcome you to the KBOO airwaves.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris.
So the Center for Media and Democracy and PR Watch had a piece very recently. Will you want to just take listeners briefly through the message there, because then we'll talk a little bit more. We are short of time, but we'll do the best we can.
Sure. The article is pretty long, so there's a lot of different things discussed, but the primary points that I think people would be interested to know about are how the article discusses private sector involvement in the homeland security apparatus through public-private intelligence sharing partnerships, and how these partnerships with corporations benefited corporations that were the subject of Occupy Wall Street movement protests. Other things that are important for people to know about include DHS-funded social media data mining programs that are taking place at fusion centers. These are basically programs that call information en masse from people's social media like Facebook. And specifically in Arizona, another interesting point is the Occupy Phoenix group was infiltrated by an undercover officer who was reporting information on their plans and activities to counterterrorism personnel who were also sharing that information with corporate interests in the Phoenix area, and some of that most likely included members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, and I know Occupy Portland orchestrated the F-29 protest against ALEC member corporations, and there was quite a bit of intelligence gathering and information sharing between private sector entities and the public counterterrorism personnel, including those within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, relating to the F-29 protests.
Bo, hang on a second. I'd like to get back to you in just a few moments and finish the conversation. We're fresh out of time at the moment, but there's a lot more to talk about. This is literally the corporatization of everything that we've ever known as government. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, May 21st. Janet Anderson, I'm Janet at the show today. Thanks, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson's the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, a postmortem on the Bangladesh garment factory fire that cost the life of over 1,100 people, mostly young women. And excerpts from Genetic Roulette, a hard-hitting film doc on the dangers of eating genetically modified food. This will scare the living hell out of you. Interesting documentary. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead in Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we continue to remember this most horrific fire that occurred just a little bit ago in Bangladesh. Final death toll, over 1,100 folks, mostly young women working for slave labor wages, lost their lives in a most horrific way. Want to give you sort of an update on that. I want to tell you what some people are trying to do to mitigate some of the suffering. Joining us is Barbara Briggs. Barbara Briggs works with the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. They broke the news that the workers there at that garment factory had been ordered back to work before the collapse of the factory, knowing that in the day and days leading up, the building was crumbling, making strange sounds. A bank that was located, I believe, on the bottom floor of this eight-story catastrophe closed down the day before, but these workers were ordered back, and again, joining us to talk about what happened, to remember, and perhaps talk about what you might want to do about it is Barbara Briggs. Good to have you with us, Barbara.
Hi, good afternoon, Dennis.
I wish it was under better circumstances, but what I want to do here, but I want to read one of the testimonies, a bit of one of the testimonies that you all put up at the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. This is Jasmine Sultana, sewing machine operator, New Wave Style. I am 20 years old. I worked for over a year at New Wave Style on the sixth floor as a sewing machine operator. I am single and live with my coworker in this tiny room. I come from the Jazor district in the southwestern part of Bangladesh. On the 24th of April, I was working on the sewing machine. An hour after starting time, the factory building came crashing in. Like other colleagues, I was trying to get out using the stairs, but I fell down. An iron bar hit my back hard. I could not move. I fell in the dark. I was in the pitch dark for 9 hours without water or food. Some of my coworkers were screaming out for help and water. Volunteers pulled me out of the wreckage at 6 p.m., and I was sent to the Medical College Hospital in Sevier for treatment. The iron bar hit my back, broke the tissue and muscle. I was released from the hospital on April 30th, but I still can't walk straight as I feel pain in my back. I need further medical care. My parents live in the countryside. I have one sister who also works in a garment factory. I wonder if I will be able to lead a normal life. This is one of the lucky ones, huh, Barbara?
This is one of the lucky ones. There are about 3,500 workers working in 5 factories producing for the U.S. and for Europe. Of those, 1,127 are dead. About 2,400 escaped or were rescued. Some 400 are still hospitalized. We think about 200 to 300 should be hospitalized, but have been discharged because there needs to be bedroom for the more injured. These are workers that were producing for the Children's Place, for Abercrombie, for Benetton, for a whole, you know, there were Gap documents found in the building, Gap contracts, and Walmart documents. These are workers who are making 14 to 26 cents an hour. They were working, and this is typical for Bangladesh, but it's confirmed for this factory. They were working 6 and 7 days day weeks and 12 to 14 hour shifts per day.
You and the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights broke the story about the fact that the workers were ordered by the owner, who's now, I think, still in custody for, among other things, his own protection, because people want to shred him. Remind people what happened there.
Sure.
And how
sure.
That unfolded.